welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, and coming up in this hour, mystery. Later on, it's a crime, Mr. Collins, the show from 1956, but right now, the first Niner program. Known for its drama, this is a light comedy and mystery called The Tin Box, from May 6th, 1948 on CBS.
Campana's first Niner program. From the little theater off Times Square, starring Olin Soule and Barbara Luddy, with an all-star cast presented by Campana, the quality name in cosmetics. It's theater time on the Great White Way, and tonight is a red-letter date on this season's calendar, for it marks the opening of a brand new play on Broadway at the little theater off Times Square, focal point of New York's exciting and gay entertainment district. And here is our host for the evening, the genial First Nighter.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm delighted you can be with us this evening. Tonight may well be one of the most exciting nights of the theater season, so let's be on our way, shall we? Here's my cab. Won't you step in? All right, driver, the little theater. Up Broadway, across 42nd Street, and into the famous Times Square district, a sparkling wonderland of millions of electric lights and swirling happy crowds. And over there, where the lights are brightest, is the little theater. Well, here we are.
Oh, isn't that you, Lil?
Don't crowd me, boys, but I think that's Diana Lynn.
Look at the women around. That guy must be some movie star.
Have your tickets ready, please. Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your seat.
Thank you. We'll go right in. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, in the midst of one of the season's gayest theater parties. Ushers are showing distinguished and fashionable ladies and their handsome escorts to reserved seats and boxes. And each glamorous lady coming in seems to cause more of a flurry than the last one. I see Frank Worth and the famous First Nighter Orchestra in the pit. But to this evening's play, the program says it's a comedy mystery entitled The Tin Box. The author is Gene Cromhurst. In the leading roles are Olin Soule and Barbara Luddy. The part of Louis Lindstrom, an unemployed waiter who loves mystery shows, will be played by Mr. Soule, and Miss Luddy will take the part of his wife, Gladys. Supporting this talented pair will be Willard Waterman, David Ellis, Larry Dobkin, and other equally famous names. Now the house lights are being dimmed, and in just a moment we'll hear the play.
Curtain, first curtain.
There's the signal for first curtain. The house lights are out, and here's the play.
Louis, the way you're doing it, you ain't never going to have your own restaurant. I think the only way to save money is for you to go to work.
Well, go back to sliding plates along a counter. Where's that going to get us?
Louis, I don't see how you're ever going to open a restaurant without money.
Gladys, did you ever study finance?
No.
Did you ever read about how the smart people got where they are?
By not working?
They don't use their own money.
They don't?
No. They always operate with somebody else's money. That's how it's done, and that's how I'm going to do it.
Well, it don't sound honest to me, Louis. I got a responsible job. I'm a cashier. I handle money. I can't afford to get mixed up in anything crooked, or I'm through being a cashier for the rest of my life. And then where are we?
Look, Gladys, it isn't crooked, see? It's plain everyday business. There's no sense in using your own money when you can just as easy use somebody else's.
Whose else's?
I don't know yet. I'm working on it. I'm working all the time, Gladys. Up here, not with my hands. That's what counts, brain work. I listen to mystery shows, I think, and I read all the time.
What do you read?
Want ads, mostly. Business opportunities. Papers full of them every night.
Personally, I think the help wanted mail columns is more practical.
Yeah, that reminds me. I got to go after tonight's paper. Leave me have a nickel, would you, Gladys?
Okay, take it out of my purse.
How about a little extra for a cigar?
Well, make it a nickel cigar. People won't know the difference unless they get close.
5, 10 cents. Yeah, I'll be right back.
No, be careful. There's been a lot of holdups lately.
Yeah, who'd hold me up? Nobody'd hold me up except for a laugh.
Sometimes people get slugged in between laughs. So hurry back.
Sure, Gladys. I'll take the shortcut through the empty lot.
If I had $1 million, then you-hoo.
You-hoo? What's this? Box. valuable inside. Must be something mighty valuable. If I had $1 million, then you... If I had...
Can I take a look at that package, mister?
Huh? Who are you?
You wouldn't know if I told you. Let me see that package.
The package?
Yeah. Tin box you carried under that newspaper. What's the matter? You scared? Let me see it.
No. Why should I be?
I don't know, but you ain't doing nothing about it.
It doesn't belong to you. It's some personal stuff I'm taking home.
Personal?
Yes.
Like money, for instance?
No, not money. There's nothing valuable in there. Keep your hands off that box.
Okay, if you want to get tough. But I ain't true with you. Not by a long ways.
All right, what's the idea? You scared me out of my wits with that pounding.
Hey, leave me in, Gladys. Close the door.
Who's keeping you out? What's that you're carrying under the newspaper?
That's what I'm going to find out. Hey, give me the hammer and a chisel, quick.
The hammer and chisel? What for?
I'm going to pry this box open. Hurry up, will you?
Sure, Louis, sure. You act like you just robbed a bank. I never saw you that excited in my life.
Come on, make it snappy, Gladys.
I will. What are you doing now?
Pulling down the shade.
Why?
I got my reasons. Hurry up, will you?
Here.
Oh, thanks.
What's this all about, anyway? Where'd you get that box? You didn't rob a bank, did you?
No, I didn't rob a bank, did I? I found this in an empty lot right across from a banana shoe factory.
Well, what are you so excited about? It's probably full of old banana peel.
Banana peel. It's full of money, that's what it's full of.
How do you know?
Because a tough-looking gunman tried to take it away from me.
A gunman?
Yeah. He had a gun under his coat. I seen it when he lifted his arm to grab the box.
How do you know what was in it?
He knew. Don't ask so many questions.
How else do I find out anything?
Gladys, he wanted the box because he recognized it, see? And he said something about there being money in it.
Stolen money, maybe. Don't get mixed up in anything like that, Louis.
Stop worrying, will you? Leave me do all the worrying and all the thinking, and we'll both be rich.
All right, if you say so.
Just a simple little snap lock. Ought to open with about one more good push. There, that does it.
Louis, it is money. The box is full of new green bills.
Yeah, 50s, 20s, 10s, 5s. They're all in bundles. Hey, let's see how much there is.
I'll help you count. Here, let me take these.
30, 40, 45. Here, yeah, you can count the singles.
Hey, look. It's all counted for us. Here's a cashier slip.
Yeah, let's see. It says $10,000. There's $10,000 here. Gladys, $10,000!
The curtain comes down on the first act of the night's play in the little theater
on
Times Square.
Smoking in the outer lobby or downstairs only, please. Curtain, second curtain.
The first nighters are hurrying down the aisles to their seats. The lights are dimmed, and here's the second act of The Tin Box.
Holy smokes, $10,000.
Yeah. I wish my hands had stopped shaking. Do you know what this means, Gladys?
No, I ain't had time to think. And besides, you told me not to.
Yeah. Oh, boy. What a joint, a place I could furnish for dough like that. No smelly hash house like the Regis Cafe. I could fix up a place that'll make the Regis look like the city dump.
The Regis is a perfectly respectable family restaurant.
Sure. Measly little 20-foot counter and tables for ladies. I'd have a 40-foot counter with a black marble top, 50 tables and upholstered chairs. Padded carpets over the whole floor.
All for $10,000?
Easy. We can get fixtures on credit if we have to. And Gladys, you won't be punching a cash register anymore.
No?
No. You'll be the cook.
But Louis, ain't you going too fast? Maybe we got no right to keep this money. You said it belonged to a gunman.
I didn't say it belonged to him. I said he wanted to take it away from me.
It's the same thing. He knew what was in the box, so it must have been his.
Gladys, where would a gunman get $10,000 unless he stole it?
I don't know, but if he stole it, wouldn't it belong to the people he stole it from?
How would we know who he stole it from? Yes, I think this money rightfully belongs to us.
You do?
Sure, we got it, haven't we?
Huh?
Possession is 9 points of the law. Haven't you ever heard that before?
No. Oh, only when I was a kid, we had a saying, finders, keepers, losers, weepers.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing, only in legal words.
Just the same, I got an idea the law's a little different when you're grown up.
Now, listen, Gladys, I'll explain the law to you. If you find something of value, you got to make a reasonable attempt to locate the owner. You got to take that chance. Of course, if you can't find them, then you're the owner.
Even when it's something like $10,000 of stolen money? Are you sure, Louie?
No, I'm not sure. Let's look in the paper.
Here's the paper you brought home.
There ought to be something about it. Let me see it.
Louie, look at the headline.
Yeah, I see it, Gladys. I see it.
John Waverly kidnapped.
Oh.
Louie, you're shaking so I can't read the small print.
Prominent stockbroker kidnapped shortly after midnight this morning. His family's already been contacted by one of the gang.
Look, it says arrangements have already been made for the payment of ransom.
Payment of ransom? So that's what I stumbled onto. The ransom money.
Louie, what usually happens to a man who's been kidnapped if the kidnappers don't get their ransom money?
Oh, they find him dead somewhere.
That's what I thought. You got to return this money right away.
To who? The Waverleys or the police?
What?
And get arrested as one of the kidnappers? Gladys, do you know what you get for kidnapping in this state? The electric chair.
Well, how's about a man who stopped you on the street? He's one of the gang. Give the money to him.
Where can I find him?
Maybe he's still hanging around.
That's what I'm afraid of. If he sees me first, I'm as good as dead.
Could you sneak it back where you found it? Tonight, for instance, while it's dark.
I don't know, Gladys. Gee, I wonder what Sam Spade would do.
I think I got an idea.
Right now, I could use one.
The man who stopped you doesn't know me. I could sneak the money back to the empty lot.
Uh-uh. They'll probably be watching that spot. You're not going to get yourself shot just because you got a husband who got too grabby. I'll take it over, all right. Only not in that tin box. I don't want to be seen with that.
We could wrap the money in some old newspaper.
Yeah, that's the thing to do.
Louie.
Huh?
You'll be careful, won't you? If anything happened to you,
I'll be careful, Gladys. And you know something?
What?
I'm beginning to think I'm not near as smart as I thought I was.
What's the matter? Did you lose something around here?
Who, me? No, I didn't lose anything.
You better stand still. This gun's loaded.
Sure. I'm not going anywhere.
I know that better than you.
Oh?
What are you sneaking around in these weeds for? What did you lose?
Nothing. I didn't lose a thing.
No?
No.
Then maybe you found something.
I...
What are you sneaking around in these weeds for?
I was going to Central Avenue. Shortcut.
Through the weeds?
Hmm?
Don't you like the path over there, or is that too easy?
I thought I saw something over here in the brush. Well, I guess it wasn't anything. Nothing at all.
You saw something like what?
I don't know. Something shiny. I guess I was just seeing things.
It's pretty dark here to see something shiny.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is.
What's in that package you're carrying?
This package?
Yeah, this package.
It's my laundry. I'm taking some stuff over to the laundry. They stay open late for me.
Yeah, they must.
Yeah.
All right, get going.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be snooping around here.
Mm-mm.
Somebody might just take a notion to put a bullet in you on general principles.
It wasn't the same one, Gladys. It was another member of the same mob. Sounded just like the Whistler. Tell you, I'm lucky to be alive.
Do you think he suspects you?
Of having the ransom money?
Yeah.
I guess I convinced him or I wouldn't be here to tell you about it. Those boys would just as soon kill a man as look at him. They'd rather.
And that's what they'll do to poor Mr. Waverly if they don't get their money.
Don't I know that? They'll never believe the money was left there in good faith. Never in 1,000 years. And the Waverleys don't even know they haven't got it.
Maybe we could phone the Waverleys. We could explain how we got it by mistake.
Their wires are probably tapped. They'd trace the call and every cop in town would be up my throat before I could move. Who'd believe me, Gladys?
Nobody, I guess.
No. If I could only get that money back to the Waverleys. Hey,
I could enclose a note telling them what happened. Then they'd know what to do, and nobody could trace anything to me.
Couldn't you do it by mail?
Mail $10,000?
Oh.
Anyway, there's not that much time. It's got to be done tonight.
How?
The Waverly's address is in the paper. I tell you, I might get near enough to a window to toss it in, note and all. Sure, yeah, let's write out a note and I'll get started.
There's some paper on the desk, and Louis.
Yeah?
Be sure to walk on Light Street.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take a streetcar and I'll have the money wrapped in newspapers, same as before. I'll be safe enough, don't you worry. Now, this is the place, all right.
Just a minute, you.
Yeah.
Where do you think you're going?
I nowhere in particular, officer.
No place to go, so you thought you'd drop in the Waverlys, is that it?
Not exactly. To tell the truth, I read about the kidnapping, and I came here to look around.
Oh, one of them morbid sightseers, eh?
No, sir. I was really on my way home.
Well, I'd suggest you go there.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Now, what's in that package?
The package?
Yes, the package.
It's some old shoes. I walk a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do. Oh, they were out of the regular wrapping paper.
Well, all right, Mr. Moore, but keep moving. And should you have any ideas about seeing the back end of the house, you'll find police on all sides. Go on, get moving before you get yourself into trouble.
I'm licked, Gladys. I don't know what to do. It's like a nightmare with the police closing in on one side and a mob of killers on the other.
Poor Mr. Waverly. He's as good as dead.
Yeah. And I killed him just as sure as the kidnappers will kill me. And they will, Gladys, as soon as they find out I took their ransom money. All because I grabbed onto a tin box and wouldn't let go. I was smart, Gladys. Oh, what a smart guy I am.
Let's go to bed, Louie. You can't do nothing more tonight. Maybe it won't be too late tomorrow.
Gee, I wish that'd be Ellery Queen. Hello?
Louie?
Yeah, Ellery? Gladys? What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. I'm calling from the restaurant. I was worried about you. Is everything all right?
Well, nothing's happened yet, only I got to get out of this house or I'll go nuts.
Oh, Louie, not yet. Not till we can think of something.
Think of something? My head's about to bust and I can't come up with a thing. I got to get away from these four walls, Gladys. I got to get out for a walk or go out of my head. I got to, Gladys. I tell you, I got to. What can I do? Gee, I'm jumpy as a cat.
Meow!
Oh. Go away, kitty. Hey, what's that black sedan parking there for? Who are those guys getting out? Oh, one looks like the guy that first spotted me at the tin box. Yeah, it is. And the other one's probably the guy that caught me in the lot.
Is this the guy, Jim?
Yeah, he's the one. Saw him carrying a tin box. He was trying to hide it under a newspaper.
Yeah, how about it, mister? Is he telling me the truth?
Well, I was carrying some stuff home in a box, yeah. He tried to tell me it belonged to him, but it didn't.
Yeah, what kind of stuff? What was in the box? You better talk fast.
It was some fishing tackle.
It was a tin box. It was the same tin box that had the money in it. He's lying. Can't you see he's lying?
Fishing tackle's carried in tin boxes?
You see?
Maybe he's telling the truth. Maybe you're lying, and that's a bad thing to do, Jim.
No, I'm telling you the truth. He's got the money. Search his flat if you don't believe me. He lives in that red brick building on the first floor.
How do you know?
Well, I saw him go in. I saw him go to the window and pull down the shade.
Sneak.
Say, now that I get a good look at you, haven't I seen you someplace before?
Well, I don't know.
Sure. I remember. In that vacant lot, you were snooping around.
Search his house. You'll find out if I'm lying or not.
Yeah, maybe and maybe not. Come on, Jim. Let's get back in that car.
No. I tell you, I haven't got the money. What are you going to do to me? What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do to... Hey, wait. Leave him alone. I'm the guy you...
Oh, he wouldn't listen to me. Doggone it, I've just gone and killed another man.
And the curtain comes down on the second night of tonight's play, and this is the end of time.
Smoking downstairs or in the outer lobby only, please.
Nodders are all in their seats, ready for the last act. And there goes the curtain.
Gladys. Is that you, Gladys?
Sure, it's me. Who'd you think it was?
I see you brought a paper.
Have you read it?
No.
Look here, Louis, on the front page.
Waverly rescued.
And he's alive. They caught one of the gang that was guarding him.
That's wonderful news. Let me read it. Excellent police work.
Huh?
Captured kidnapper won't talk, but police expect an early roundup of the rest of the gang.
Ain't that a relief? Now we got nothing more to worry about.
Gladys, the rest of the gang is still at large, and Waverly can't identify him because it says he was blindfolded.
So what?
I can identify two of them. One of them's been taken for a ride, but the other one's still alive. I think he's the leader, and he knows I can identify him.
How did you get all this information, Louis?
The hard way. And you can bet your sweet life that mob leader's pretty desperate by now, too. And that means he's going to try and get me before the police get him.
Oh, dear. And I was so happy when I come home. Guess I'm just too dumb to tell good news from bad.
We got to do something quick, Gladys.
What can we do? We got $10,000, and I wouldn't spend a single dollar of it for all the coffee in Brazil.
Yeah. I had an idea I could open my own restaurant with somebody else's money. But I never thought it would be like this.
No, neither did I.
If this is what the smart boys go through, I'm happy to stay dumb. And that's what I've been, dumb. Nobody knows it now any better than I do.
Except me.
Yeah, except you. Tell you, Gladys, if I get one more chance, I'll never try to be smart again, so help me.
Who's that?
That's one of the kidnapped mob. That's who it is. It couldn't be anybody else.
You got to get out of here.
Where? Where can I go?
Anywhere. Go out the back door.
Oh, some of the gang are probably out there, too. I'd get chopped, mowed down as soon as I stepped outside.
Then I won't let them in. I won't open the door.
They won't give up that easy. They'll break the door down if they have to.
I could call the police. It's better to be arrested as a kidnapper than to be killed by one.
There's no time. Those fellas aren't going to stall around much longer.
What can we do? There must be something we can do.
I'm going to give myself up, Gladys. I'll take my rap.
No, Louis. I don't want you to die. I love you, Louis. I love you.
I love you too, Gladys. And you remember that if anything happens. Well, baby, this is it.
What's the matter, Lindstrom?
Huh?
You afraid to open the door?
How did you know my name?
It's on the mailbox. You mind if I sit down?
We don't want your money, Mr.
Marco. Gus Marco.
We don't want your money, Mr. Marco. It was all a terrible mistake.
So you do have the money?
Yes, we got it, and we'll give it right back to you right now. You do whatever you want to me, but leave the little woman alone. She ain't done nothing.
No?
No. Like she said, it was all a mistake. I found the money in the lot, but I didn't know it was ransom money. I tried to put it back, but you stopped me. She didn't have nothing to do with it. Now, it was all a mistake.
It sure was, Lindstrom. It sure was.
What are you laughing at?
Let's see that money and I'll tell you.
Gladys, get the money out of the closet, would you?
Sure, Louis. Right away.
You know, the trouble with you and your wife is you don't know how to read a newspaper.
Huh? Here's the money. We wrapped it in old newspapers. It's all there. You can count it.
You won't get very far with it. You know that, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, you and your wife don't know how to read a newspaper. You don't read anything but the front page.
And the classified ads, business opportunities.
Sometimes there's a lot of news on the third page, too.
What about the third page, Mr. Marco?
Officer Marco.
You're a cop?
A policeman?
A policeman, that's right.
But your pal, Jim, I thought you took him for a ride.
I did. In a squad car.
A squad?
Besides, he's not my pal. He's Jim Barnes, who carries the payroll for the Banner Shoe Factory. You see, we didn't believe his story.
What story?
That he got a heart attack while he was carrying the payroll.
Oh.
He dropped the money. Dropped the money in the empty lot and then wandered off in a daze. He was just coming to when he saw you with that tin box.
Then this ain't the ransom money, the money left for the Waverly kidnappers.
No, that's what I mean. On the third page of your newspaper, there was an article about the missing payroll.
Oh, Louie, ain't it wonderful? Now we really don't have nothing to worry about.
No, no, not a thing, except going to jail for keeping somebody else's money.
I guess you thought it was easier than making some for yourself. Huh?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, I'm ready to take my medicine.
I'll make a deal with you.
A deal? What kind of a deal?
I won't take you to jail if you'll promise to forget about easy money.
Oh. Gladys, give me the classified section. Turn to help wanted mail.
It won't be necessary, Louie. The Regis Cafe needs another man at the counter.
Yeah, well, I guess that settles that. I'll take the money and leave you two alone, but let me give you some advice.
What?
Next time you see Jim Barnes, be sure you're on the other side of the street. He's liable to punch you right in the nose.
There's the curtain on the last act of tonight's new play from the Little Theater off Times Square. Listen to that ovation. The audience liked it. The plays a hit. This is the way in this lobby are getting round after round of applause. 1 week from tonight, you're cordially invited to join us at another premiere from the Little Theater. Next week's play is a romantic drama entitled Love in Summer, a tender human story that will pull at your heartstrings. Be sure to save the date, same time, same station. And ladies, remember, you never know how pretty you can be until you try Magic Touch. And now we move out of the theater and into the street.
Here's your cab, Mr. First Nighter.
Thank you. Good night.
Campana's First Nighter program, starring Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule, is a copyrighted radio feature. Tonight's play was pure fiction and did not refer to real people or actual events.
First Nighter program came to you over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The First Nighter program on Tuned 2 yesterday from May 6th, 1948 on CBS. That story, The Tin Box, was penned by Gene Fromhurst, marking the first of two scripts that were aired on live radio during its golden era for her. The second appeared on The Whistler in June of 1951, called The Murder of Byron Blake. You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Mandel Kramer, Gail Collins, and Richard Denning, stars in It's a Crime, Mr. Collins. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode from 1956 called The Forest Green Ticket.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins. Hi, Mrs. Collins. And what have you called this case?
We've called it, Jack, the case of the Forest Green Ticket.
What kind of a ticket was it, Gail?
The ticket belonged to a young girl, Jack. She came into Greg's office in San Francisco.
Yes?
I'd gone to the office with a car to pick him up. We were just going to turn out the lights and lock the door when this girl walked in.
Are you Greg Collins?
Yes. Most of my clients have the courtesy to knock.
I'm afraid I haven't time for the formalities. It didn't even occur to me. What is your usual fee?
$50 a day.
I'll pay you $100 a day if you'll help me.
Well, go ahead. Keep talking.
Well, this is confidential and...
Oh, that's all right. I'm his wife.
What's your name, miss?
I'd better not tell you that.
Not a very good start, is it?
What I want you to do is very simple. I have something in my purse here. It's this ticket.
What about it?
Take it. Go on.
What's the ticket for?
It's a baggage check for luggage at the Oakland Railroad Station.
What am I supposed to do with it?
Just hold on to it, that's all. No matter what happens, hold on to it.
For how long?
3 days.
Is that all you're going to tell me?
I can't tell you any more than that. I just can't.
Well, frankly, I don't handle cases where I'm working in the dark. I think you'd better...
Don't say that, Greg. Give her a chance.
Please, you mustn't turn me down. You've got to listen to me.
Well, I am listening, but you're not saying very much.
All right. I'm an heir to an estate.
Yes, surely. Is that so?
I can't claim the money in the will if I don't get to Chicago with what's in the baggage I checked at the station. I'm afraid I might lose the ticket. I'm also afraid the other heirs might try to stop me. They might try to take that baggage stuff away from me.
Any more to the story?
No, that's about it.
Hold the ticket for her, Greg. It won't be any trouble for you.
I said I'd pay double.
Well, I...
Suppose we say triple. Suppose I offer you three times your fee.
Well, the higher you go, the less I like you.
Oh, please.
Where do you come from? What do you do?
I'm a secretary to a physician.
And you can pay fees like that? No, maybe you better forget about me. There are other private detectives in town.
I haven't time to see the others. I don't dare walk in the street again with that baggage check.
Greg, I think she's telling the truth. He'll hold the ticket for you, and just for his usual fee, too.
Would you, Mr. Collins?
I don't know.
He'll do it. Just leave that baggage check on the desk.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
I don't know how to thank you, Mrs. Collins.
Oh, don't thank me. Just try to stop worrying. Greg's kind of a smart cookie, even if he does drive a hard bargain. You'll get your ticket back.
Thanks for getting
it. Yeah, but
good
I...
night.
Well, maybe you'd like to sit here and run this place, Dale. How'd that be, huh?
Greg Collins, you stop being so grim. You're so hard-hearted. You know as well as I do that girl's in trouble, and you felt very sorry for her.
Now, just because you're a sentimental pushover...
Everybody's always said I'm a very good judge of faces.
Yes, yes.
Why, everybody could see that girl's honest. She's...
Yeah, if she's so honest, she wouldn't tell us her name. And as for that fairy tale about her will...
Never mind about that. Maybe she had a good reason for inventing a story.
I don't like it, dear. It's a lot of monkey business.
How do you know it's monkey business?
Did you see inside her purse?
When she took out the ticket?
Why? Did she have a revolver? Well, maybe somebody threatened her.
There was something more interesting than a revolver in her purse.
What was it?
Another ticket. A green one. Just like this. Obviously, another baggage check. Why did she give one to me and hold on to the other?
Craig grumbled for a while, and then he shoved the ticket into his wallet. Well, I expected all sorts of weird things to happen during the next 72 hours. I behaved like a character in a B picture, peeking out the window of our apartment, expecting to see a man in a black hood drawing a bead on Greg from the roof across the way. But Greg strolled around with a stub in his wallet, and life was perfectly serene. Oh, so disappointing. And then, next morning, we saw the newspaper headline.
Girl's body found in trunk. Shocking discovery in railroad baggage room.
Greg, not...
Take a look at her picture.
It is. It's the girl who came here the other night.
That's right. And what do you think happened to her? She was murdered with a butcher knife.
I couldn't believe that person was dead. But there it was, in black and white. Keep your ears pinned, friends. We'll be back in a minute with more of our story. After he got over the first shock of seeing his client's picture in the newspaper, Greg took things quite casually, as if he were talking about how to bid a grand slam instead of a ruthless murder.
Now, Gail, the way I figured it...
Greg, you've got to find out who killed that girl. Quickly, too.
Now, look, my fine crusading little warrior. How do you know she was the innocent victim? Maybe she was working with gangsters.
That girl? Oh, Greg, don't be absurd. I took one look at that girl's face.
I know. Everybody says you're a fine judge of faces.
All you have to do is find a person who has baggage check 28. Then you'll see they killed an innocent girl.
Look for check 28. That's a hard way. I have a number 27 in my wallet. Remember?
What of it?
You want to play cops and robbers?
Why?
We got work to do, Gail. Second story work.
What do you mean? You go into the baggage room and see what the check's for. You can't just breeze up and claim it. Someone might be watching.
That's why we're going at 3 a.m. Well, before we go, I want you to do one thing for me.
Track down someone. Go to headquarters.
No.
What do you want me to do, Gail?
Kiss me.
Why, Mr. Collins, asking your wife to kiss you? What would your secretary say? At 3 a.m., Greg and I were at the rear entrance to the baggage room. It was pitch black in the corridor running behind the main foyer. Greg had a skeleton key, a jenny, and a few other charming toys. I watched while Greg worked on the door.
This won't take long, Gail.
Oh, hurry, Greg. Someone's liable to come along.
we are. I'll get the light. Now, look for a trunk over lease mark number 27. Work fast.
Let's see. Those shelves are marked 10, 15.
Here it is. Tag 27. It's another trunk.
Can you open it?
Here it comes.
Well, there's liable to be another body in there.
Uh-huh.
Do you think you should open it?
Yeah. Here it comes.
Oh! Why? It's full of phonograph records.
Broken records. Someone's done a good job of smashing them.
And it's hard, aren't they? Queer fine.
And grab a few of those records that are just cracked at the edge.
I got him.
That's all we'll need.
Now what?
Now let's get out of here before someone sees us. You can't play records in the Who's Got.
Greg has a record player in the office. Until then, we'd only used it for doing an after-business hours rumba. And we never thought it would help solve a homicide. He took one of the broken records and spun it on the turntable.
First, the nightmares didn't come very often, Doctor. Then they came regularly. In each dream, I was being carried through the air by an eagle.
I guess that's all we'll get from that one. And what kind of a recitation is that supposed to be? Who's talking? To what doctor? Greg, that girl said she was working for a doctor.
Well?
I don't get it.
They said doctor. Did you talk that way to your dentist?
No.
To a surgeon?
No. Oh, of course. They're talking to a psychiatrist.
That's right. That girl was working for a psychiatrist, Gail.
They don't make recordings of what the patient says, do they?
Well, of course not. This is a new twist on the blackmail game.
Well, how do you know it's blackmail?
Well, she wouldn't have been killed if all this was on the up and up, would she? Why would someone make these records? For entertainment at parties?
You mean they rig a recording apparatus in the psychiatrist's office?
Sure. Maybe you knew it, and maybe you didn't. The blackmailer listens to these recorded confessions and then gets money for keeping quiet.
How horrible. Taking advantage of sick people.
It pays off well, too. You pick an eminent psychiatrist who has very wealthy patients.
But that means...
That means your girlfriend was helping. She'd have to.
No, Greg, not that girl. I just can't believe it. Maybe she was forced to help. That's it. The blackmailer had something on her, too. Then she must have decided to take a chance and run out on him.
Could be. That'd mean she took the recording, smashed him, put him in the trunk, and tried to get out of town. But the blackmailer got wise. He killed her and... threw her into the other truck, using her other ticket. It was a trunk probably filled with her clothes originally. Now we're going to find that psychiatrist.
How? Oh, there must be hundreds of them.
It should be hard to find this one.
Why?
She said she was a doctor's secretary. Phone the County Medical Society, Gail.
Get a list of psychiatrists.
That's it. And you and I are going to business. We're going to be the Speedy Employment Service and hope our voices hold out.
Hello, Dr. Stewart. This is the Speedy Employment Service. Were you looking for a secretary?
Hello, Dr. Hamilton. This is the Speedy Employment Service. I believe you're in need of a secretary, Doctor.
Good evening, Dr. Gilbert. This is the Speedy Employment Service.
Dr. Bryant, were you looking for a secretary? You are? Well, we'd like to send a girl to see you.
You've got him, Greg.
Yes, Doctor? All right. Tomorrow, yes. Yes, we know the address. Thank you, Doctor. Bye.
Dr. Harold Bryant. That's our man.
Oh, now I'm going to develop a few compulsions and phobias so that I have to be treated. I'll see Dr. Bryant in the morning.
Can't I come, too?
Yes, about 20 minutes after I get there. You'll have a chance that should appeal to you, darling. You can be very dramatic. You walk into Dr. Bryant's waiting room and faint.
Just walk in and faint?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, that'll pull him out of his office so you can look for the dictaphone setup.
Good girl.
He's lost his secretary, so he'll have to go out himself. Now, let's see. Who will I be for the doctor? Napoleon? Davy Crockett?
The next morning, Greg went to Dr. Bryan's office. As Greg told me later, he treated the doctor to quite a case history.
Go on, Mr. Collins.
Doctor, I've never told this to anyone, but I cheated my bank out of more than $3,000. You see, the president of the bank is a very close friend of mine. He trusts me implicitly.
Greg went on for 20 minutes, giving the doctor one of the most lurid tales imaginable. He confessed a half a dozen crimes, a fantastic collection of neuroses, and some incredible adventures with assorted, wicked women.
She's a married woman, Doctor, and she's a very famous musical comedy star. She and I have been seeing each other secretly.
Excuse me, Mr. Collins. I'll be right back.
Oh, surely, Doctor. I'll wait here.
Won't take a second.
Are you the doctor?
Yes.
Please, I was walking by. I saw you, a sign. I feel terrible. Weak.
Give me your arm. That's it. Easy now. Easy.
It's the heat. Mm-hmm. Always affects me. The heat.
Just wait here a second. I'll get a cold towel.
Oh, no. Oh, don't leave me.
All right, all right. Sit down. Oh. Put your head between your knees. Breathe deeply. Slowly.
It worked. I kept the doctor busy while Greg rummaged around in his office. It didn't take long for him to find a recording apparatus. It was hidden behind a sofa. I finally made a brilliant recovery, and Greg came strolling into the waiting room, so I left.
Sorry we were interrupted, Mr. Collins.
Tell me, Doctor, now that I've given you a brief description of my symptoms, will you take the case?
No, I will not.
Oh, but
I've been a practicing psychiatrist for more than 12 years, Mr. Collins. One of the most important factors in my profession is the ability to know when a patient is lying. The human equation is my province.
Why, Doctor,
I don't know why you've chosen to waste my time with poppycock. If this is some practical joke, I'm afraid I don't find it amusing. Now, my fee will be $50.
That night, we waited in Greg's office while he explained the little trap he had prepared.
I was careful to say my name and address very loudly when I spoke to the doctor, Gale. We should get results very soon.
You really think the blackmailer will come here? To your office?
Well, of course. That recording machine was still working, so he must have made a record of all that I said to him. He'll be here to ask for money, to keep quiet about what I confessed to Dr. Bryant. Good. The fish are biting.
Heavy knock at the door, and Greg and I looked at each other. Could this be the murderer? In just a minute, we'll bring you the climax of the case. Greg and I waited for one more knock. Then I went to the door and opened it.
Good evening.
Dr. Bryant. I'm Mrs. Collins. Won't you come in?
Thank you. You seem in better health now. I'd like to talk to you, if I may, Mr. Collins.
I certainly, Doctor. But first of all, tell me one thing.
What do you want to know?
What was the name of your former secretary?
My secretary? Her name was Molly Woodward.
Oh, there's someone else at the door, Greg.
Doctor, would you wait with my wife in the other room? I'm expecting a client, and I think he's going to tell me something of the utmost importance. Do you mind?
No, I don't mind. I want to talk to your wife anyway.
Oh, this way, Doctor.
I'll see who's at the door.
Good evening. My name is Gilbert. Herbert Gilbert. You, Mr. Collins?
Yes. Did you want to talk to me, Mr. Gilbert?
May I?
Sure. Come in. Go right ahead.
I'll get to the point immediately, Mr. Collins. You visited a psychiatrist this afternoon, Dr. Bryant.
Go on.
You know, people get very confidential with an analyst.
Well, that's hardly a startling observation.
Oh, but I do have a thought about it that's quite intriguing, Mr. Collins. You see, I have, shall we say, access to certain information. For instance, I can tell you precisely what you said to the doctor about stealing money from a bank, about a musical comedy star.
What do you expect to do with that information?
Oh, nothing. Well, that is, if you cooperate with me.
Cooperate?
I'll cooperate with you by keeping quiet. And you cooperate with an occasional payment.
How much?
Say $1,000 to begin with.
You cooperate in a big way, don't you?
Oh, I've been rather successful, yes.
You were until Molly Woodward decided to break up your racket and tried to leave town, taking a trunkful of your records with her.
You have some interesting information, too, don't you, Mr. Collins?
You forced her to work for you, Mr. Gilbert. But she finally got enough gumption to run out on you, taking your filthy blackmail material with her. The records from the apparatus you made her hide in Dr. Bryant's office.
Poor Molly. Such a foolish child.
You caught up with her, Gilbert. You killed her and removed a baggage check from her pocketbook. You sent for what was checked on it. But it wasn't the trunk you expected, the one filled with records. I had the stub for that one. So you put Molly's body into the trunk they brought you and then took it to the terminal.
You have a very capable mind, Mr. Collins. You're quite right, Mr. Collins. Your version of the story is perfect. I had to do away with Molly.
That's all I wanted to hear, Mr. Gilbert. Now stay right where you are.
Gee, just what are you going to do?
You fell for my fake spiel to the doctor.
Fake?
And don't move, Gilbert. I'm a pretty good shot with this gun.
Gail!
What's the idea?
Gail, this is Mr. Gilbert. He's the man who killed Molly Woodward.
Did he?
He spoke up. Call the police.
Just a moment. I'm afraid I still hold a winning hand, Mr. Collins.
Really?
When the police come, I shall deny everything I've said. It'll be your word against mine.
Well, I play cards myself, Mr. Gilbert. And you know, a neat way to win at cards is to borrow the technique of the masters. So I borrowed from you.
What are you driving at?
You just confessed into a recording apparatus. I set one up behind that sofa.
Why?
Use the phone, Gail. Call headquarters.
Greg, I didn't know you had a recording apparatus in here. Oh, darling, what an idea.
Get the police. Now, tell me, Dr. Bryant, why did you come here to my office?
Because of your outrageous story this afternoon, Mr. Collins. And the curious coincidence that a young lady came dashing in while we were talking. Her performance was quite convincing, but her temperature wasn't. She complained of heat stroke, but hadn't any of the symptoms. I came here to find out what you were up to.
Well, as a matter of fact, Doctor, I wondered what you were up to. I thought you might have been the guilty party.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm just an ordinary psychiatrist.
Oh, in that case, Doctor, could I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Those stories my husband told you about himself and those women. Do you really think they're all lies?
Well, I...
Remember your professional ethics, Doctor.
Yes.
Well, Doctor? Oh, mind you, I'm sure he made up the stories about committing certain crimes here in San Francisco. But then we come to those stories about going out with other women. Do you think they were all fiction?
Of course, Mrs. Collins.
I see. And you, Greg? Were they all fiction? Or was some of it true?
I refuse to answer, on the grounds that it might tend to incriminate me.
classified advertisement. If you have a secondhand lie detector kicking around your attic somewhere, call me. You've got a customer. Oh, yes. Footnote. After the psychiatrist left, Greg took out some rare sherry he saves for his most important clients. We turned on that recording machine and played a new mambo. Pretty soon we forgot about the machine, the mambo, and the case. Oh, we forgot about everything. Say, did you know that Shangri-La was in San Francisco? Don't go away. In just a moment, we'll be back with you.
Well, folks, Gail and I hope you enjoyed our adventure, the Forest Green Ticket. Be sure to visit us next time for another Puzzle in Murder. For where there is crime and romance, there you'll find Mr.
and Mrs. Collins.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins, on Tuned to Yesterday, a 1956 episode from Mutual. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonnier. Thanks for tuning in.